Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, I guess they need Kevin Durant. All right, they definitely need Klay Thompson. Look, this Golden State Warriors team that lost last night, the players that were on the court, that roster that Steve Kerr has right now of healthy guys can't beat Toronto. They can't beat Toronto in Oakland, Toronto, neutral site, Mars, anywhere. They can't beat Toronto. And the Raptors are going to win the NBA championship if that's the roster Steve Kerr has. If that's the roster he has left, they can't beat the Toronto Raptors. So they need Klay Thompson back, and they probably are going to need Durant now, because this could get out of hand quickly. Game four is now very, very critical. The fourth game of a seven-game series is the most important game. From the standpoint of the series, the result of a game four is either going to be one team sweeping, the series is tied at two, or one of the team has a commanding 3-1 lead. Those are the three options. Series is over, it's tied at two, now goes to best of three, or somebody has a commanding 3-1 lead. So Friday night, Steve Kerr has got to find one or two or both of those guys to be available for him in some capacity. And if that means Durant is 60%, that might be good enough. That team can't beat the Raptors. That team can't do it. The Raptors last night, I will give them all the credit in the world for doing something we never saw Portland do in the entire Western Conference Finals. Every time Golden State made a push, Toronto hit a big shot. Danny Green was great. Serge Ibaka had six blocks. Kawhi Leonard with 30. Kyle Lowry with 23. They made a big shot. Gasol had 17. No one could guard him. DeMarcus Cousins looked terrible. But this Golden State Warriors team cannot beat this Toronto team with the roster they have right now. And I don't care if Steph Curry goes for 60. They can't do it. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, what the Warriors are going to have to do next, and what Toronto will have to do if Warriors come back with Klay Thompson or Durant. We'll talk about Game 3 and what went right for Toronto, what went wrong for Golden State, and the one thing that went right for Golden State next. SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I gotta hand it to Ron. This could be a really good Throwback Thursday. This is, on this date in 1971, the final episode of the Ed Sullivan Show aired. So we're celebrating that. This, of course, is the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, probably the most famous appearance of a musical act on television in the history of the medium. So this could be fun throughout the morning today.
Oh, we're gonna have some fun. Definitely.
This could be a really good one. This is a really good one. So again, Ed Sullivan Show. We don't have that anymore. Like, we don't have any sort of acts on TV. Like, we don't have like variety shows.
I mean, we have talk shows, and didn't Ellen try to do a variety show?
I think she did.
Like a primetime variety show. Yeah. And just like three episodes. They were like three strikes and out. I don't know.
Yeah. But we don't have an Ed Sullivan type of show. I don't know. Would America be into that kind of thing anymore in 2019? With
maybe, I feel like
viral
now,
stuff.
Now our variety shows are, you know, they have to be competition shows.
Yeah. Everything's always a competition.
Can't just bring on a guy who wants to spin plates.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you can't do that. Nope, that's true. So again, Ed Sullivan. So last night. I'm glad. I was telling you before the show started. I was glad that Klay Thompson didn't play.
Yeah.
All right. And I was glad because he's hurt. And here's I have been begging the national media for a long time to stop doing what they do, which is become cheerleaders for the athletes when you really don't know the circumstance. So what I mean by that is every single time an athlete gets hurt, we want to go down that narrative of, well, unless you amputate his legs, he'll be out there. He's a warrior. He's a competitor. He'll be out there. Even if he has to crawl, he'll be out there. That's not true. That's not true. And we keep doing that to these guys when it's false. Are there athletes who play with injuries? Of course. But we don't know the severity of the injury, and we're not in the guy's body. And so to think automatically that an athlete will just go out no matter what he's feeling, no matter how much pain he's in, that's not accurate. There have been plenty of times where we think, oh, it's just a mild this, and we don't see him play. What did we talk about at the Super Bowl the entire time? The effectiveness of Todd Gurley, right? He was hurt. Was he hurt? Was he injured? Was he dealing with an injury? Why weren't they using him? Et cetera, et cetera. We've got to stop doing this as a national narrative with journalists because we just don't know, right? I told you the story of Cosell doing this on Monday Night Football, and Chet Forty got in his ear and said, what if he doesn't come back, Howard? You don't know. We think it's awesome. We just think it's a fun cliche thing to say. Oh, he's a beast. He's a warrior. He's a warrior. Of course he'll play. No, he didn't play. And he didn't play because a hamstring injury affects different people differently, and there's a severity to it, and obviously he could not go. He would have gone if he could, but he couldn't. And when we say that a guy, you know, is going to play regardless, we're not doing the injury or the situation any journalistic justice. Hold out until you know for sure. Because as well as you think you know a guy, you don't know him that well to know what his pain threshold is. Because journalists, and I hate when they do this too, they think they're friends with these guys. They're not friends with these guys. You know who are friends with these guys? Real friends of these guys. That's who it is, right? You may know them on a professional level, and they may talk to you on a professional level, but you're not at his house at 2 o'clock in the morning when he's talking to his buddy like, man, I can't move. Like, I can't feel my wrist, or I can't feel my leg, or I can't feel my ankle, or my toe is killing me. I can't walk. They're not inviting you to their house to witness some of the pain shots that they have to take or some of the pills that they have to take to numb the pain of a nagging injury. But doesn't matter because we're in this race and we're in this competitive media world where everybody wants to make sure they got the right story and everybody wants to make sure they're the first, not right, but first. And so we pretend we have relationships with guys when we really don't. And that's what happened with the Klay Thompson situation. Right after game two, the narrative was Thompson's going to play no matter what because he's a beast. He's a warrior. Well, he didn't play last night. And I was glad he didn't play last night because it shows that the severity of the injury was real. That what he went through in leaving with 7 minutes to go in game two was a real injury. And that's something Golden State is going to have to overcome. Right? We've been playing this Durant game forever. Why not play it with Klay Thompson too? But as I said at the top, and you watched it last night. And Ron, you were saying this. You knew exactly how the game was going to play out when Klay Thompson was out.
Once we got the news.
Once we knew he wasn't going to play.
No,
it's like, oh, yeah, oh
the
boy.
The only thing that I don't want to have happen is for it to be almost like the Belichick thing. You know, are we going to head now into game four with Durant might play, Klay Thompson might play? Oh, no, they're out. Are we going to be doing that the entire time? That's going to just... I don't know. That's just going to
make me crazy.
That's going to make the finals just unbearable if we have to keep playing the, you know, what if game.
But like I said last night, I mean, I said at the top of the hour, this Raptors team, the Golden State doesn't have a roster that can beat them right now.
Right now, no.
They need one or two or both. I don't care. But right now, there is Steph Curry, and he got no help last night. Friend of mine put it on Twitter. He goes, yeah, well, they still have three other All-Stars. Yeah, but one of them can't walk anymore. Right, one of them wasn't even effective. I mean, stop.
Well, when you look at
the Boogie Cousins story now is nothing.
No.
Great, I'm glad you got to play in the finals. You had a good game too, but he can't move.
You know what?
So get him out of there.
What Boogie Cousins is, it looks like an incredible offseason signing back in October, September. Like, oh my God, right. I can't believe they signed him. Now they have five All-Stars on their starting. And you look at it, he didn't do anything last night.
He could not do a thing. He can't play defense. So Marc Gasol was like running through the lane. He can't play defense. So that forced Kerr to put somebody else on Gasol who just ate him alive.
I mean,
I think McKinney took a shot at him and was like, what am I going to block this guy? What are you kidding?
I don't want to get all stat guy on you, but when you look at the box score of last night's game, the Raptors had five players comfortably in double digits.
Yep, exactly.
Comfortably.
And in fact, Mike Breen brought that up early in the game. Like, within a couple of minutes, all five starters had points.
Yeah.
Like, right away.
Everybody was contributing. Everybody. I mean, obviously, Kawhi Leonard got his. He was the leading scorer for the Raptors, followed by Kyle Lowry. And you would expect those two to be your leading scorers. But everyone else, I mean, just shy of all five starters having 20 points each. And then you look over to the other side, and I had made the comment to you. I was surprised that Steph didn't have 70 points last night.
Yeah, he needed to have 70 points last night. He was the only one that could score.
Yeah, I thought for sure that's what we were headed for because you corrected me. I thought he had 30 in the first half, but you said 25.
25. It's being equated to LeBron in 2015 in the finals, the first time they met Golden State, which is like LeBron and Kyrie Irving was out, and it was like, this is all I got. This is all I got. That's Steph Curry last night. It's all he's got. The Warriors outside of Curry, take Curry's stats off the board, they shot 37%.
Yeah.
They shot 39% with Curry. The Raptors shot 52% from the floor on the road at Oracle and hit 17 three-pointers. Listen, I give Toronto and Nick Nurse a lot of credit. After game two, in a game they were at home and they were up by double digits in the third quarter, and Warriors erased that with an 18-0 run. You let a team in your place go on an 18-0 run. That is demoralizing. And yet, a couple days later, they come back and put on a show exactly how you beat this Warriors team without Klay Thompson, right? Just let Steph do his thing and shut down everybody else, and you're good to go. Kerr said this afterwards. He said, I knew we were only going to score 109. That's all we've been doing this entire series. So unless we're going to win this game, we got to win this game. We got to hold them to 108. That's really hard to do. That's like, good for him. That's exactly right. Toronto was great last night. And again, every time Golden State made a push, anytime they felt like, ooh, okay, look at that. Here it goes. It's down to nine. Here comes a run. Here it comes. Toronto would hit a three. Danny Green would be open. Van Fleet would hit a rainbow three-pointer that he knocked down.
Van Fleet?
Yeah. He played at Wichita State, right? He hit a shot. He threw it a mile in the air, and it went right straight down in the hoop. It was great.
You can't call that a rainbow. Because the rainbow has a defined arc to it.
Yeah, he threw it way up because he was getting blocked. And so he had to throw it over the guy's arms, and he had enough trajectory that it landed in the basket. Yeah, it was a great shot.
That might be a waterfall. Can we call that a waterfall shot?
Yeah, a waterfall. That might have been a waterfall. And Danny Green was fantastic. Danny Green was open for a number of threes. He knocked down a bunch. So it was a great night. Great night for Toronto. I mean, Serge Ibaka had six blocks. I mean, they were confident. They had nothing bothered them. And, of course, not having Klay Thompson threw the Warriors game off because nobody else can contribute. Nobody else can play well. Draymond Green didn't have a very good game. Pedestrian 17 points. He's the second leading scorer. Steph had 47, needed 70. Couldn't get it. So now we head off to game four on a Friday night. We'll see what happens. But one of those two have got to come back. Because Golden State's roster can't beat this Raptors team. And if the Raptors go up 3-1, I don't like the Warriors' chances, even if those two guys did found a way to come back. I'm sorry. I know I know that Cleveland did it in 2016, but with two games in Toronto, and this Raptors team, again, no joke, they're good. They're a championship-level team. They're not a sacrificial Eastern Conference lamb here. They're an excellent basketball team. But I don't like them losing three straight to the Warriors, even if one or both of those guys came back. I think Toronto could win one at home in a three game where I'm playing two in my own place. All right, 800-777-2907 on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver, and I'd spell that with two N's, please. We're going to continue our talk about game three last night, and also continue to look at some of the mini camp news in the NFL. It's coming up on SB Nation AM.
Here is Elvis.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Final day of the final episode of the Ed Sullivan Show aired on this date in 1971. This is Elvis, of course, as you heard the announcement. I'm glad we're doing these because the screaming is the best part, right?
Right. That's why you don't get that anymore.
No.
You don't have, I'm going to say it, fangirls passing out because their favorite artist is performing live in front of them.
Can you imagine being like security or people like back then just dealing with this unbelievable euphoria?
It would have been easy.
These girls were crowding the stage, man.
No, they were sitting in their seats, passed out.
Oh, that's true. That's true. They were losing their minds. The Beatles, you see the pictures? They're crying.
Yes.
They're crying. John Lennon and Paul McCartney are out there. Ringo's on the drums. George is playing in the back. And they're just weeping, openly weeping that they're on the stage. Nuts. Absolutely nuts. Don't take a chance on being stranded. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts to get your battery tested. It's free of charge and one of the many services available. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find the exact battery for your car or truck. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So we go to game 4 on Friday night. And the Golden State better figure this out. Dynasty in jeopardy or just a road bump on the road to a couple of more titles even after Durant leaves?
I guess it depends on who you ask.
Yeah. I know a lot of people want to bury this dynasty if they lose this one. But we'll see.
We talked about this earlier. If they have players that leave, will the Warriors continue being the Warriors? Is the dynasty really dead?
Yeah, good point.
This may be the new look because the rumor has been Kevin Durant's going to leave, Klay Thompson's going to leave, so this is what the Warriors will look like.
Then that's it. Then it's over.
It's dead.
It's over.
This is it. And if it continues to be like that, this series is over too.
Yeah, Toronto's going to be the NBA champs. The Larry O'Brien trophy is going to go to the North.
Can't wait for Kawhi Leonard's speech when he accepts the MVP.
Exactly. See y'all in Los Angeles. Thank you very much for a year of fun. I'll take it off.
You're giving him too much credit. He wouldn't say that many words.
L.A., bye.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks. See you later. Yeah, it was not, again, once it was announced that Klay Thompson was not playing, I thought, okay, this is not going to be good. This is not going to be the Warriors team that capable of beating Toronto, and they didn't beat Toronto. So then they got crushed. It was never really close. It never got close. As it felt like there were times where Golden State could cut the lead, but it never even got to that. So now we got game 4 coming up.
Right now, my favorite, though, is Draymond Green.
Draymond Green.
This is going to be
filled
fun.
With confidence.
This is
fun times ahead. Fun times ahead. We're going to go to Toronto, win, and come back to Oracle, win game 6, and celebrate. Good. Good for you. Good for you. Let's see if that actually takes place. So, I don't know. I hope so. Listen, it was weird, too, because I've been saying this all along. And listen, I always admit when I'm wrong, and I have no problems admitting when I'm wrong. I make a statement, and if it doesn't come true, what are you going to do? But I said yesterday, and I think I've said it at the beginning of the season, you could see Golden State winning the series in 5, but you can't see Toronto winning this in anything less than 6 or 7. If the Toronto Raptors are going to win, I was like, it's going to go 7. They're going to win the 7th game at home. I don't even think it could go 6. But now that's different. The injury and the severity of it, and we don't know yet, the Raptors could wrap this up in 5 games if Klay Thompson never comes back and Durant doesn't come back. Because that's how bad the Warriors are without either one of those guys. Now, with Klay Thompson, I will contend, if he's healthy, the Warriors got a great shot of getting right back into this series, tying it up at 2 apiece and going from there. I still don't think they need Durant per se, but they need one or both. They need one or the other. And that is very clear. Curry can't score 60 points and let the other guys not contribute. Right? Guys have to hit some shots. Guys have to play better defensively. And there were moments where the Warriors did play really good defensively. There was a moment right before the half, the final few minutes of the first half, where defensively they were great and really looked sharp defensively. And then it would just lapse a bit. And then Toronto would find a way to get their shot off and make some shots. And look, some of the shots Toronto made, they weren't easy shots. They did get some lucky breaks. A lot of offensive rebounds kind of were tipped their way, and they were able to convert into baskets. The one shot that Danny Green had, I believe, that one in the second half that was down to the buzzer, they had missed. It was kicked back out to Kawhi, who traveled, remember? And then Draymond said, it's travel. What is this? But he kicked it out to Danny Green, who knocked down the three, and it came as the shot clock expired. Those were the kind of things when you know your night is going right, those are the kind of things that go your way. And sometimes it doesn't go your way where the ball just gets tipped and it's into the hands of your opponent. So we'll see in game four, but there's no chance. This Warriors team is not good enough to beat this Toronto team with the roster they've got now. They need another one of those two other guys. So, yeah. But you know what? I've been kind of wondering I think a Toronto Raptors championship adds more to the Kawhi conversation than a loss. Because a loss, all right, well, he had a good year, may want to come back and try to win again, or he's leaving because his mind was made up in the first place. Winning almost puts it on, well, I did what I was supposed to do here, now I want to get out of here. I don't want to try to get 2, 3, or 4. I still have my heart set of playing in, you know, L.A., in my hometown. Here's the thing about that. Remember, too, you only get one shot at your career. Right? That's it. And you make decisions and you have to live with those decisions. Sometimes it doesn't matter what industry you're in. If you want to rise to the top, sometimes you find your comfort level and you stay there, but at that sacrifice, you don't ever rise to the top of your profession. If Kawhi Leonard always wanted to play in Los Angeles, if he's always wanted to go there, does Toronto and the Raptors, do they change that based on winning a championship, losing a championship, just being part of this whole finals thing? Does that change? Or is that dream so strong that you don't want to lose it? You don't want to ever give it up. Maybe he's thought of this his entire life of one day playing in Los Angeles. But maybe he's also going, well, I only want to play in Los Angeles because they had an opportunity, but this is actually better. So a championship win by Toronto, does he feel like mission accomplished? I've given you what you wanted. Now it's time for me to go get what I want. You're happy. I'm happy. We're done. Or does a finals loss make Kawhi go, you know what? This is really cool. And this is neat. This is what I like. I'm enjoying this. The city's awesome. The fans are awesome. My teammates are awesome. I like my coach. I like what this is. I like my situation.
No, you know, I think it's the other one. I think he's one and done.
I do too. I think it's too much.
If we go based on fandom, he had a great fan base in San Antonio. San Antonio loved him.
Sure he did. Yeah, of course.
They absolutely loved him, and he owned that city. He could literally own that city. I mean, he could put down money and just buy San Antonio eventually.
And people always sell it to him. And people use the Toronto fan base as the selling point. Fan bases that win are usually awesome. Like, there might be a different degree or whatever by a little bit, but go anywhere and lead your team to a championship and see what they'll do. They'll go crazy. The city will shut down. Of course they will. They'll go nuts. You don't think, in L.A. they'll be like, oh, man, thanks for the title. Appreciate it. No, they'll have a huge parade. It'll be fantastic. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, they'll so put a it's the city. I mean, statue like the city out front of Staples Center for them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, nevertheless, it'd be an interesting conversation if the Raptors win. And you know what? It'd be kind of neat for basketball just to see that happen. Again, I don't think the Warriors are done per se, but they better figure out how to bring back one of these guys.
Have we ever had an athlete in any sport? Just, I mean, I know we've talked about Rent-A-Vet before, you know, jumping on a team just for a season. But have we really ever had one that was at like Kawhi Leonard's level, where he led his team to an NBA Finals champion and then leaves the following year?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I'm sure there's one and I have to do my digging, but that's a great question. Like, literally rent a player, win a title, and then says, that's it. Thanks. I'm done. Not a late season addition, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, the whole
where we pick him up at the trade deadline or
right,
something.
Yeah, but not
I mean,
something like that. Because you can say that about
from
Justin
start
Verlander
to finish.
Almost, but
yeah,
he's still with
sure.
the Astros.
Sure. But from bringing him on board in the final year of an expiring contract, he leads him to the title, locks it in, and then says, that's it. Thanks for everything. I'm gone. That's a good question. SB Nation Radio.
So let's have a fine welcome for a very fine talent. Yeah.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
1971, Ed Sullivan's final episode. These are some of the better moments from the show as we celebrate Throwback Thursday. Knew that I would. James Brown.
What a fun way to just kind of have a hodgepodge of the greatest artists that ever lived, by the way.
I know. And they're probably all dying to get on that show. You know what it reminded me of? I saw this documentary on The Muppet Show. I don't know why I saw this documentary, but The Muppet Show was filmed in London back in the 70s. And at first, they had a hard time getting people to get on the show, right? Because it was like a week long of rehearsals and filming and, you know, takes and all that stuff. You're working with puppets, right? But once the word got out that the show was fun, like it was really fun to work with Jim Henson's crew, people wanted to do it. And then when the show was popular, they were getting phone calls from every major artist's people, representatives, to get on the show. And they couldn't book everybody that they wanted. There was so much demand of famous people to be on that show for the exposure and just the fun week of just getting away from their normal routine and working with puppets. I kind of think the Ed Sullivan Show was like that too. No matter how popular people were, they probably were like, got to get on that show somehow. There's got to be an opening for my band, for my guy, for my singer, for my whatever. Got to find a slot. Because Ed Sullivan's got the biggest thing on TV, and this is the easiest way to send a message quick.
That, or if you got the invite, you didn't say no.
No, that's right. You didn't say no, we're going to do it.
You didn't say no. Nowadays, if any of the late night talk shows invite you, you're going to like, let me see if it fits in my schedule.
Right. Right. But Ed Sullivan, if he called, you were probably like, we're going to change things around to make sure we get there.
You almost get the feeling it was kind of like a comedian on The Tonight Show. Back with Johnny Carson. If you wanted to be on there, and then if Johnny called you over to the couch, you're like, yes.
I made it.
I'm
Can you imagine
be
not
now.
Getting called to the couch? I must have. Like going back to the green room, like, okay, yeah, here's your stuff. Thanks. Appreciate it. The door's over there, and there'll be a car waiting
Johnny
for you.
Johnny probably giving you that excuse. Oh, I would have called you over, but we just ran out of time.
It's a
tape show. You couldn't edit me in.
God, that must have been just awful. I saw this story yesterday, and it made me realize, boy, my broadcasting career did not go as well as Jim Nance's. Did you see this video of Phil Mickelson? Jim Nance, I did not know this. Jim Nance has a house at Pebble Beach with a replica of the seventh hole in his backyard, complete with bunkers and everything. And Mickelson made a hole in one on the backyard hole, and they all had this big celebration.
But the best thing about it is Jim Nance is on the call.
Jim Nance is calling the shot that Mickelson is doing from the backyard seventh hole, which is great. And by the way, I want to reiterate it. It's not he doesn't live on the golf course near the seventh. He's recreated it in the backyard. I wonder what scale it is. I don't know if it's the exact distance. Although, because the seventh hole is actually one of the shortest holes in the world in competitive golf. It's like, it can be like 99 yards. It's really short. But it's the wind and it's the fact that you're right on the ocean that makes it so iconic. But still, that is amazing.
Yeah.
What a nice spread to have in life. If you can get a house at Pebble Beach and, oh, by the way, make a nice replica hole on your backyard of one of the most famous holes in the world.
And, oh, by the way, just happen to have a guy over for lunch what I'm assuming is just an invite to lunch.
Yep. Just really, hang right? out. Like, hit some shots.
You know, hey, Phil, you want to come over for lunch? Sure, Jim. No problem.
That was amazing. It was fantastic. Way to go, Nance. Nice career, Jim Nance, at CBS to earn that kind of those kind of accolades.
My favorite thing, though, is just him like actually calling it. It would be awesome if that was to actually happen not this coming weekend, the following weekend?
Yeah, next weekend, yeah.
Can Jim just recreate that call or maybe just tape what he did and just play exactly. that, air that yeah. instead?
Yeah. Exactly. We can't because Fox has the U.S. Open.
Oh,
that stinks. They could somehow hack it into like Joe Buck's call, which Buck will probably butcher because he's not really that great at golf.
Yeah. That's a little upsetting. Can't just, I know we have sports guys attached to certain stations, but can't we have sports guys just attached to certain sports?
Yeah, Nance and golf really go hand in hand. He's really great at it.
Is there anybody else really that you want to listen to call a round or two?
Listen, I like Buck. I'm not a Buck hater. He's certainly earned all the accolades that he gets. I know people don't like him, and he's an easy target.
I like him in baseball. I like him in football.
But he can't do golf. He just does not have – because everything he does – listen, when you do a golf broadcast, it's not the same as baseball drama, as football drama that you have to convey, right? Golf doesn't really have that. It's silence until action. And that doesn't happen in other sports. In other sports that Buck calls, you feel the crowd, you feel the energy, you feel the tension. In golf, everything is silent, and then you have to gradually get to the point of when somebody hits a great shot. But you have to blend it in to the energy at the course. And I don't think Buck does that very well. I just don't think his – and this is something he can learn. I'm sure he's got people who really can help him with – the way the sport should be sounding on television. But Nance just got it immediately, because Nance, when he was a young guy, he was on the golf team at Houston, so he knew the sport. He was roommates with Fred Couples, and he was very young when he got on the CBS Masters team. He was like in his 20s, and he was calling like the 16th hole, and he was on the Masters team in 86 when Nicholas won. He was, again, 20 years old. So he's learned from the Pat Summeralls, the Ken Venturis, the guys that really know how to do the sport and really bring it to light, and Buck doesn't. So Nance doing play-by-play at his own house is actually pretty awesome. It's pretty great. But Mickelson makes a hole-in-one on a pretty nice spread. Back for a broadcaster, nice spread. It's not Mickelson's full driving range, six greens, and multiple bunkers that he has in Rancho Santa Fe, but a replica golf hole in your backyard at Pebble Beach? That's getting it done in life, my man. That's pretty good.
It's not too shabby. Sweet.
It's not too shabby at all.
And again, let's just reiterate, that's his Pebble Beach home.
That's his Pebble Beach home, right? Because he probably has another home in Connecticut working out of New York.
We don't know what his other home, but the golf courses they have there. I'm going to venture a guess that he might have a home in Augusta.
Probably.
He's not staying in a Motel 6 or a Holiday Inn in Augusta.
No.
He has his own house.
But, you know, I'll never forget one time I was at the U.S. Senior Open Championship in Colorado Springs, where I was living at the time. And Greg Norman was there. And I was, you know, kind of following Greg Norman. I was a big Greg Norman fan. And afterwards, he had his press conference, and he was wrapping up a Sunday round. He finished in the top six, I think. And he just had a really good, you know, really good week. And he said afterwards, he goes, well, I think I'm going to spend some time at my ranch out in, you know, one of these towns in Colorado. He had a ranch out in the mountains of Colorado. And I thought, you know, tonight, this guy is going to pack up. He's going to get on a jet. He's going to fly out to his ranch in the mountains of Colorado and sip a glass of wine and just enjoy the sunset. Like, that's to, you know, a great week of golf at the Broadmoor and doing that. I wonder if Nance does that when he has lulls in his broadcasting life, where he's like, you know what? I'm going to take the plane. I'm going to go out to Pebble Beach and sit in my backyard and just chill out at Pebble Beach for a few days before I have to go to whatever thing CBS is going to have me go to. What a nice way to just get out of life for a second. Go to your Pebble Beach home and chill out for a bit. I hope Mickelson's working on his U.S. Open game, though. This is the one tournament that he hasn't won to complete the career Grand Slam, and he ain't getting any younger. He's going to turn 59 in June. 49 in June, not 59. 49.
He's had success at Pebble Beach, right?
He's won. Yeah, he's won the AT&T Pebble Beach before. So, I mean, yeah, and in 2010 at the U.S. Open, he was in contention.
I just feel like Pebble Beach favors older golfers.
Yeah, because they can't lengthen the thing like a monster. It's not going to be 7,800 yards.
There's no room.
That's right.
Unless they start recreating land in the ocean.
Yep. So if you're chipping and putting is good, yeah. If you're chipping and putting is good and you're hitting the ball well and you're striking the ball well, it's not a daunting course where you – and Mickelson can hit it a long way, so I don't think that would be an issue for him anyway. He could still hit it a mile. But it's not one of those long bombers – you know, kind of golf course. It's a strategic golf course. And Phil, at times, has played strategic golf course as well. And sometimes he's gotten greedy and gotten in trouble. But, you know, he needs a,
that's
a
U.S. Like, for older golfers who can't keep up with the long game. You know, you really depend on your short game, and that's where it can come. You know, there's experience for them because they've seen every type of wind, every type of element flying them. And so they, you know, they can draw from experience where younger guys, you know, they're still getting their licks in.
Mickelson's first professional tournament when he turned pro out of Arizona State was the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach in 1992.
Woo.
That was won by Tom Kite. I found that little nugget of the
92.
Gem.
That's 27 years ago.
Yeah, my God.
Man,
professional golfer ever since, rolling right along. So, but, you know, just having a little fun with Jim Nance's backyard. Well done, Nance.
That's pretty sweet. The biggest question remains, will it be sunny?
That's true. Will it be sunny?
Because I've been to Monterey, Carmel area many, many times, and on the rare occasions has it been a nice, beautiful, sunny day.
By the way, wasn't Clint Eastwood the mayor of Carmel?
Yep.
For a while?
Sure was.
All right. Very good. Very good. Now, Pebble Beach is a nice place.
Oh,
nice place. Beautiful. God, it's gorgeous, isn't it? It's just great. It's on my bucket list, but I don't know when I'm ever going to. It costs. You have to stay. You know, in order for a guy like me to play Pebble Beach, you have to stay at Pebble Beach, and you have, it's like $600 to play.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the whole package is, you know, very expensive just for one round.
But, you know, bucket list.
Yeah.
That's why it's
you could do it.
Augusta,
you need connections, right? Like, if you want to play Augusta, you need connections. But the two other golf courses that are on people's bucket list, St. Andrews and Pebble Beach, you can play. If you have the means, you can play. I mean, they're not public per se, but they're accessible. Augusta's not accessible. You can't book a hotel at the Augusta Inn and get a tee time at the Augusta National. But St. Andrews, you can play, and Pebble Beach, you can play. You know, they're usually booked up pretty well, but you can still play them. But so one day maybe. I'd like to go to Scotland to play golf, but I'm worried about the haggis and the weather. I don't want to eat haggis, and I'm afraid of going out there for a week and it raining every day.
But if you went there, wouldn't you have to eat haggis?
Yes, I've said this before.
That's the problem, right? You have to.
I've told people this. I've said, listen, I want to eventually go, and I pretty much am going to have to wait for my kids to graduate college to go because, you know, that's the kind of vacation that I would have to take without my wife because she ain't going golfing. And I'd have to go with like a buddy or something. But I've always told people there is going to be a point where I want to go to Scotland and I want to do those packages where you play the different kind of British Open golf courses. But when I'm there, I'm going to eat haggis, which if you don't know what haggis is, it's like chopped up heart, liver, lungs of a sheep, right?
Yeah.
And it's in, they put it in a sheep's stomach and then they boil it.
Boil it.
And
not
you're supposed
grilled,
to put it,
not fried.
They boil it. And it's the heart, the lungs, the liver, and they chop it up. They boil it. And
intestines.
Then you, and yep. And then you, yeah. And then you mix it usually with potatoes. But I said, I'm going to have to do that. It's kind of like a thing. And I know people would say I'm crazy, but you kind of have to.
God, just thinking about that just makes me gag.
It's not good. Not good. So,
but what do we talk about on a Thursday morning?
If it's the price I pay to play St. Andrews, that's what I'll have to do, I guess.
Now, is that a breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
Yeah, that's what I have to find out. All right, coming up next, Michael's got the answer to a question we had earlier about an athlete winning a title and leaving. That's coming up next on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, celebrating 1971 on this date, Ed Sullivan Show, a final episode. We're playing back some of the hits of the show, some of the best musical acts. This is The Doors, of course.
Most controversial appearance by any band.
All right, so what's the backstory for the controversy?
The controversy for this one is that Ed Sullivan explicitly... really emphasized for them not to say the word higher.
Oh, got it.
Because it referenced drug use.
Right.
And as you could hear here, Jim Morrison definitely, you know he was going to listen to.
Yeah.
So that lying girl, we couldn't get much higher. He went ahead and said that afterwards. They took a verbal berating from Ed Sullivan. Saying that they would never play the Ed Sullivan Show again, which Jim Morrison looked at him and said, "We just did."
Yeah, we're not doing it twice. This is a one-shot deal for both of us.
So this is when you know, like, when a band like The Doors played the Ed Sullivan Show, that's kind of, you know, that's one of those, like, because The Doors are somebody you wouldn't expect to play a popular right? television show.
Exactly.
And that's when you know that anybody, everybody wanted to play the Ed Sullivan Show.
That's exactly right. We asked the question, has anybody ever been a rent-a-player, led a team to a championship and left? Michael on Twitter, Deion Sanders with the 49ers. That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good one. All right. Pretty good. That's the only one I could think of. I tried to rack my brain, try to figure it out in baseball. Couldn't really do it. Couldn't really get it. Now, there have been, like it's, like you said, there have been guys who have been picked up in the middle of the season.
Middle of the season.
Right? You know, quick run, win a title, and then they don't re-sign. That's different than what the Raptors were doing.
Yeah, because we hear about it all the time. I mean, you can look at Manny Machado.
Sure.
I mean, the Dodgers didn't end up winning, but they picked him up midway through the year just exactly. for that reason.
But the Raptors got Kawhi in a trade in hopes that a year would convince him that Toronto would be his home. We'll see, but that was the overall plan. More on Game 3 last night in Oakland and the series shifting to the Raptors' favor. Overreacting or not, we'll talk about that coming up on SB Nation AM.